This is the Diehards.
Sale winds, he fires. 20 and a miss, frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Welcome to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network on this Thursday night. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts, like we always do. We got Brian McDonald producing the show, making sure the train stays on the tracks back in Houston, Texas. Let's start here, Brendan, as the MLB resumes. It's not literally the second half of the season, but that's how it is referred to on the heels of the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. Between those two events, what do you like more?
I don't really like either, but maybe
that's a totally fair answer.
I mean, it's just because I'm a guy that was first introduced to the All-Star Game back in 2002, which was also the year the two teams tied. So it was a 7-7 finish there.
That's
great start. Great start to my experience with the MLB All-Star Game, for sure. Of course, there have been some great home run derbies over the years. I think Bobby Abreu versus David Ortiz is one I remember the most. The Vlad Guerrero years occasionally. There were some years that jumped off the page. But over the past like 5-6 years, I don't know. It's just lost its luster for me. I do like Alonso. He's been adding a factor to the home run derby for sure. But I just don't find any interest in it like I used to.
I think it has a little bit of juice left. You know, the equivalent in the NBA is the slam dunk contest, and that has lost all cachet. Last year's might have been the worst ever.
Every dunk has been attempted.
Right. And the home run derby, they can change the format, but it's the same exercise. I still think there is consistently the appeal of a young, promising star or two, like a Julio Rodriguez, who didn't win but really did steal the show at this year's derby. Then you have someone like last year with Shohei Ohtani, this who are the stars that we want to market, the faces of the sport, or soon to be at least. And then you've got, not always, but in this case, a send-off for a generational player in Albert Pujols. So it's the diverse crop of talent that it has to offer that I think keeps people somewhat invested.
Yeah, I do agree with that, and I thought the final was a great showdown between Juan Soto and J-Rod. But Soto played the strategic play, and it worked out for him in the end, huh?
He absolutely did. Brilliant.
And he got some spite in the process.
He was my pick, so I was glad he won. And we had a cheating scandal with Pujols and Schwarber. So they're finding ways to give you lots of juice. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We're going to be talking about Kyler Murray getting paid and the ramifications.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly. Brendan, we have big quarterback news and the domino effect of it that we're going to get to. But first, let's start with what came out last night. We weren't on the air at the time, so this is our first chance to talk about it together. The Niners have given the agents of Jimmy Garoppolo permission to seek a trade and also put out there that he is now cleared to start practicing. In your opinion, what's the best landing spot for Jimmy G?
Well, I think a few weeks ago, everyone would have pointed to Carolina as the obvious choice, but the thing is, now they've obviously traded for Baker Mayfield, so things get interesting now. Could a team like maybe Cleveland pop up? You know, see them going and exploring the quarterback market. They signed Josh Rosen today. As we all know, he hasn't had really much success, but they're desperate. They don't know what the situation's going to be with Deshaun Watson. They've looked at Cam Newton. Maybe you look at Jimmy G as a stopgap until Watson comes back. Who knows? Or just looking down the list here, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh did just draft Kenny Pickett, but maybe Jimmy G, again, could be that stopgap until he's ready to take over as the next successor. Or, really getting crazy here, maybe he's Brady's successor in Tampa.
Ooh. Wow. I didn't see that coming. Garoppolo, at this point, I don't view as anyone's successor or going to a place where he's going to be the backup for a season. Mm-hmm. So I love the storyline there. I just don't see it happening. But, hey, if the Bucs feel like they want to go Belichickian and light the fire under Tom Brady, give up a first-round pick to get Garoppolo in. You saw what it did for the Patriots once Garoppolo came on the scene. Multiple Super Bowl titles, not just appearances. So I do like it theoretically. I'm going to sell on the notion that it actually comes to fruition, though. But I love where your head's at. And you brought up another team, the Steelers. A logical landing spot, of course. But if I'm in that front office, I'm saying, what's the point of adding Jimmy Garoppolo? It's a few more wins that don't lead to a playoff berth. So even financially, we don't get the gate there. And then I look at it and say, let's sink or swim with whoever wins this competition between Trubisky and Kenny Pickett. And if they're terrible, we get a good draft pick. If they're promising, they're young enough that we might have someone at the most valuable position in sports we can build around. And if they exceed expectations, maybe we get into the playoffs even though no one's picking us to do so, then mazel tov, we move forward, and it's a giant win that we didn't swing for Garoppolo.
Well, the only reason I bring up those teams is because I look around the rest of the league. Some have just drafted who they believe to be the next guy, and they want to see if that player will develop. And other teams have a serviceable quarterback with the talent Jimmy G provides or better. So I can't really find any other organizations outside of that list there immediately.
One appears to have popped up. According to Matt Lombardo, an NFL reporter for Heavy.com, he has sources telling him that Jimmy Garoppolo might be bound for the ATL, with a longtime NFL personnel evaluator telling him, quote, "Don't be surprised if the Falcons jump in. You aren't going to know about Desmond Ridder for 2 or 3 years at best, and they can't afford to wait that long." They do have some pieces there, mainly Kyle Pitts. So
that's about it.
I could see the, yeah, fair enough. But
I was going to say, I don't think that's a good landing.
Well, because they lost Calvin Ridley, you know, due to a ridiculous 1 year suspension for gambling a little bit, you know, just a sprinkle. So he's out of the picture, but, you know, they at least have Pitts, and I could see the Falcons, even if they're better off tanking.
Definitely a quarterback hungry team, for sure.
Yeah, and so.
But is it a good landing spot for Jimmy G?
I mean, he does have Pitts.
He does have Pitts.
But yeah, what are the Falcons doing with Garoppolo? Just being a little bit more competitive, and that might not be the best long term move.
No, I wouldn't. If I'm the Niners, I would probably just try and rip the cord here. You know, it's not working. He's proven to be a winner out there, but the problem is they just don't believe in him, and we know he's probably not going to get over the hump. There is a team out there that could use his services and get themselves into a playoff picture. It just feels like the Niners want to turn the page.
Yeah, the Niners are ready to move on. In Trey Lance, we trust. I'm heavily in that fan club. Our loyal listeners know that. So Garoppolo, at this point, I think they feel so confident in what they've seen from Trey Lance behind the scenes that they don't feel like they have to bring Jimmy G into training camp and just make sure they're good to go with Trey Lance before parting with Garoppolo. So I think this trade is going to happen. It's a matter of weeks. And where he ends up, I'm with you. There's no landing spot that I love. But ultimately, I do think that if the Falcons are being talked about as a potential destination, then the competition probably, you know, there aren't that many teams lining up for Jimmy G services.
I mean, he's an oft-injured quarterback. He's been to the big game, but he's never gotten over the hump. And for the most part, he's a solid but not a superstar quarterback. I'd still take him if I'm a quarterback-hungry team, just to bridge the gap until I find my next piece. He'll at least get you serviceable play, unless you're trying to tank.
Yeah, and I would go in that direction if I'm a team like not just Pittsburgh, but Seattle, where I don't think Garoppolo has the arm strength to pair well with Lockett or DK Metcalf, but they could talk themselves into it for sure. And, you know, the Giants, just spend another year with Daniel Jones, with Brian Daboll, see what happens and move forward. That's a better route to go, in my opinion, but we'll see what happens.
That would be cool to see Jimmy G throw into DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
It would be fun, although a lot of underthrown balls and interceptions, I'd imagine. Let's go higher up the pecking order amongst quarterbacks. Kyler Murray, today was a good day. 5 years, $230.5 million, 160 of that million guaranteed. He now becomes the second highest paid quarterback. His average annual value of the contract, $46.1 million per year. What did you make of this deal?
Well, when I first
a
heard
strong eye roll like the Undertaker just now.
When the news first broke, I was in my car and I almost crashed because I could not believe Arizona gave this guy this deal. He has not won anything. But I did see that it was attached to his rookie deal, which made it seem a little bit more, not, I wouldn't say palatable, but, you know, you can at least accept it somewhat. It's still a crazy contract. But I just came to the realization in this take, I think this is where we're headed. The average quarterbacks in this league are going to be getting this base deal here. this is what I expect. You're going to be seeing guys like Davis Mills getting deals like this, or at least somewhat like this in the near future.
Now I'm doing the Undertaker eye roll.
Well,
Am I that far off, though? No, I think you're right that this is what's going on, unless, like, the volatility of the wide receiver market, unless the bubble bursts at some point where these owners, I can see them, especially in the NFL, colluding a little bit, and they say, hey, look, we've got to establish a precedent. Do we try to get max contracts across the table, and we'll give up something steep to make that happen at the next collective bargaining agreement? Because, like I said, Davis Mills getting this kind of money, and again, Davis Mills is a fine quarterback. Shout out to Brian McDonald, our producer and a Houston Texans fan, but he's not worth $230.5 million, at least not at this juncture of his career. Yeah, and so with Murray, I'm at the point where he has to show me in the playoffs that he can get it done. I'm not just blind faith buying in. I don't think the Cardinals really are either. But like you said, there's no choice, because I think that these, you know, Steve Keim, who runs the front office, and Cliff Kingsbury, rightfully so, don't feel like they have the kind of job security where they can say, you know what, let's not pay Murray, which means we're going to lose him at best at the end of this season, and we'll enter the unknown abyss and see if we can, you know, maybe we stink for a year and we get a great quarterback, and, you know, that will just work out swimmingly, even though, by the way, we took Murray with the number one pick a year after spending a first-round pick on Josh Rosen, who we touched on earlier. They don't have the kind of job security to roll the dice like that.
Well, and he's not a nobody. He's at least a quarterback that will give you serviceable play and at least win you eight games to start the year before wilting. I think that's just the case, though. In order to get quarterbacks like him who can produce for you and at least get you a couple wins a year, you're going to have to pay out the nose.
Exactly.
And that's going to be the case going forward. It's kind of like with the MLB with a starting pitcher now. Even if it's like a fourth or fifth arm, you still have to give up a ton of assets to get one.
It's crazy to see where the prices are going. And it is, like you said, it's not just the top of the market guys, everyone. But also keep in mind that it's more that we're trying to adjust to the new reality of the market and what these leagues are generating. It's not like these numbers, 230 and a half for Kyler Murray, just came out of thin air. It is based on different calculations here, and then it's a matter of how well can you negotiate between the margins and the difference on the two sides. So, you know, it is the reality of, you know, for a while in the NBA, for instance, before their cap spike of whatever it was, 2012-ish, 14, something in that range, where before this mega TV contracts kicked in, we were very comfortable because it had been the same way for so long, where it's a role player is like a $10 to $12 million guy. Now that role player is like an $18 to $20 million
right.
player. We just have to adjust to the new numbers.
Yeah, and it's a shocking reality, but that's what comes with these new TV deals and the advent of fantasy football, DraftKings, FanDuel. You have all this new revenue coming in. You're going to have these new mega deals popping up for the players, and they're going to reap the rewards of it. Kyler Murray just happens to be one of the first ones.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, if Kyler Murray is getting this kind of chunk of change, what is Lamar Jackson in store for?
God, I can only tell you right now, John Harbaugh and the Ravens management are just shaking
furious
in their boots right now.
But it's their fault for not getting a deal done before this happened.
Should have done it quicker.
They knew that Kyler and the Cardinals were at least negotiating, and so it might play out this way where they come to terms on a big extension.
They're basically the same player, except Lamar Jackson's taller and a better quarterback, so you're going to have to pay more.
He is undeniably better. He's got an MVP in his trophy case, and so the Baltimore Ravens, yesterday's price is not today's price. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, we're going to get into all the talks surrounding the MLB trade deadline, starting with Juan Soto. That's coming up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly, coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. The MLB trade deadline is on August 2nd, and over the weekend, we got a bombshell that really sets the stage for the potential of Juan Soto being dealt. He turned down a 15-year, $440 million offer from the Nationals, who at this point say, if you won't take our money, then you're just not meant to be here for the rest of your career, as much as we'd love to make that happen. Do you believe that they move on from him as early as between now and the trade deadline?
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, they could get a king's ransom for this player, especially from a big market team that will probably offer him the contract he's looking for. When I first heard that he turned down $440 million, I almost spat out my coffee, but then I realized it was over 15 years, and I was like, oh, okay, that now I know why he turned it down. This is not a guy who's going to accept a $29 million a year pay stub. He wants big money, and he deserves big money, just like a lot of these big hitters do nowadays. So I could definitely see them parting ways with him, and if a team like the Mets or the Yankees comes up and offers a king's ransom for him, don't be surprised if he heads up north.
Juan Soto is widely considered a top three player in the game. He's only 23 years old, and he's already held in that high of a regard. Like you said, that average annual value, it would have put him somewhere in the 20s. So no, he's not in any rush to sign that deal. And here's the other thing. I think he is definitively getting moved by the deadline for multiple reasons. One, the pending ownership sale with the Nationals, where they are looking to change hands of the stewards of the franchise. So there's going to be, you don't want to come in, buy the team, and trade Soto. You either have the resources to pay him yourself, or you let old ownership do it on their way out the door. Next is the reality that there's going to be three pennant races with Juan Soto on his new team should he get dealt. So even if a deal, you know, an extension with wherever he's going doesn't get worked out that quickly, it's still three pennant races plus the flexibility. Maybe you have him for two and you turn around and trade Juan Soto rather than being the team that hands him the gigantic mega deal that's headed his way. So Juan Soto is going to give the Nationals a record type of haul that I fully expect to happen between now and August 2nd.
You have to do it if you're the Nationals. You know he's not going to stay in town. You don't have the resources to keep him, at least under this ownership group. Get yourself some assets and refill the farm system. Or maybe even get a major league piece, like an arm or two. Like, those aren't very cheap. Might as well take advantage of the situation.
By the way, you want to know something?
A bad situation.
Absolutely, yes. And we want to know something absolutely outrageous? Juan Soto, 23 years old, is younger than 12 players from this year's Futures game. Just an absolute, it shows you.
He's a force.
It shows you what a star he is. Like I said, he's under cost control. He's only making $17 million right now and then two arbitration years after that. So there's a lot of flexibility. You could have this guy before his prime, which is scary to think he hasn't entered yet, even kicks in, make him a member of your franchise for life. Like you said, we know who the most aggressive players are. The Red Sox, they should be in it. They have the prospect and financial capital, but you're already smiling because you know that's not a reality. They will not be in the mix for Juan Soto.
I mean, I'm smiling because he fits so many of their problems. He's a perfect fit there. They need so much help in the outfield. He could fit either left or right field. Just throw him out there. He could easily fill so many problems that this team is dealing with. And I just don't see them parting ways with their assets. I do not see Chaim Bloom deciding to empty the bucket to bring in a guy like Soto.
Let me ask you this. As we look at Juan Soto and Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic mentioned when he was reporting all of this over the weekend that Soto could be in line for a deal north of $500 million. Do you think that we're watching the landscape change where star trades are about to become more common than those players finishing their contracts and departing in free agency?
I wouldn't be surprised. You see in past years, we've seen the NBA really develop a strong players association where they've kind of taken control of the league. The MLB is kind of the second closest to that, I would say, just in terms of strength. And over the past couple of years, more and more players are finding ways to force their way out of town. So I think it's going to become a trend for sure, especially with the advent of new money deals from TV coming into play. Some teams are just not going to be able to pay the freight, like some organizations will.
So I don't look at it as a player X saying, I want to go to market Y. And everyone else says, well, what can we do? And he ultimately ends up there. Like Juan Soto didn't go to the Nationals and say, hey, I feel like being a Dodger today, so it's time to go. Send me to L.A. Thank you very much. It's more a matter of the contracts are becoming gargantuan. And these teams, we know that at least most of them, including the Nationals, even as ownership's about to sell, they can do it. They're choosing not to. And they might have reasons to justify it. That's mm-hmm. fine. But they have the means. And so I do think where it used to be that we're not going to be able to keep this player, but we'll let Bryce Harper play out his contract and then sign with the Phillies. I think that the the tide has changed, and we're going to start to see more star trades happen.
I would not be surprised in the slightest. I actually think it's more likely that the Red Sox end up with a guy like Aaron Judge via free agency than I would see seeing Chaim Bloom trade away his prospects.
I agree with that. I have this feeling that are they going to end up, is that going to be the move? Hey, look, we signed Aaron Judge. I would hate that, and I can understand the
I wouldn't mind it, to be honest.
I can understand that we poached the best player from the Yankees, and he's gigantic, so you think that he's going to continue to hit tanks for years to come. But if you're willing to pay Aaron Judge, why aren't you willing to pay Rafi Devers and Xander Bogaerts? To me, that's insanity, and I have more concerns about Judge from the strikeouts to the durability to how he ages in the field than I do about, for sure, Devers and even Bogaerts, because I think he can move somewhere and make it work.
You see, I've been of the mindset that the Red Sox should sell at the deadline, just get based on what happened over the past couple of days. Up until that line drive ricocheted off of Chris Sale's nimble pitching hand, I was of the mind that they should be buyers because they were only a few pieces away from potentially going on a pennant run. Maybe not a World Series run, but a pennant run. Now I think they should just sell the farm. I've been of the mind that they should part ways with Bogaerts because I just don't get the mindset that Bloom is going to try and keep him. I just don't see that happening, at least now. If you read the tea leaves, no indication has been made that the Sox have come close to a deal with Devers or on an extension. I'd part ways with J.D. Martinez because I think he's already on the way out the door for the most part. I don't see them extending him given his age. Nathan Eovaldi, injury concerns. He's probably the most likely to stay here. You probably need him the most, given your pitching situation. But I'd part ways with him, too. Just restock your farm system. The one player I keep, if I'm the Red Sox, is Rafael Devers out of that crop. If it was up to me, I'd sign them all. I just don't see them doing that.
Right. I don't like the direction that they're headed in and how they're operating. But if this is the reality, then it does make more sense to sell. Too much would have to go right for them to contend this year. Another part of the equation that they have to deal with is that they have a lot of players that have some level of value on the trade market that could help acquire them a rental that they're not going to be able to keep on their 40-man roster when the Rule 5 draft eligible things happens in December. So it's players that they're either going to lose for nothing or they can trade them for rentals to help make a run this year. And it seems even stranger that you would bring in those type of pieces to help for October, simultaneously trading Martinez and Eovaldi and all that. So maybe you just lose those guys for nothing. Maybe you can find prospects you can get back, even though, again, the roster spots are pretty much full. So I don't know how you keep who you could get for these guys. It's a very weird dynamic, and maybe you just say, hey, it is weird to get a Josh Bell type of rental while also trading the Martinez's and Eovaldi's of the world. But that step in selling matters more to us than this.
For sure. Definitely going forward.
Yeah, so it's a strange situation, and I'm just it's perplexing that the Red Sox are operating this way because they have a top 10 farm system in baseball, Brendan. They don't need to do this. They don't need to step back. They don't need to prioritize prospects and adding more of them. What they should be doing is scaling up.
If Dombrowski was here, Tristan Casas, Marcelo Mayer, and maybe Brian Bello as well would be on the way out for Juan Soto.
Exactly.
And maybe they'd be also dealing one or two other deeper prospects for a pitcher.
By the way, they could pay Devers, Bogaerts, Martinez.
Oh, and they would also be doing that too.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. They could do this and acquire Juan Soto. Again, they have the financial and prospect capital to make this a reality. They could do that and add Joe Musgrove on the free agent market, an ace pitcher who was in the All-Star game, if they wanted to. And that might sound like, how could they do all of those recognizable names?
They're one of the three organizations in baseball that have the capital to do so. The problem is, I think they've committed to this route of sustainability and being consistently in the hunt year in, year out, instead of having this Jekyll and Hyde, you know, path.
I'm not seeing them operate with an approach that spells that out. Let's be honest. They got lucky last year. It was one of those where you're not really good enough to be a true World Series contender, but you let the chips fall where they may, and they broke in their favor up until the ALCS. And so, to me, this approach is just dumbfounding, quite frankly.
Unfortunately, it just seems like that's the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it really is. Stick with us here on the Diehards, because coming up next, we will be joined by Chris Curtis, executive producer at WEI, to go around the horn on Boston sports. Of course, we'll be talking Red Sox and a whole lot more with Chris Curtis. That's coming up next on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Kravitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Kravitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. We got Brian McDonald producing the show back in Houston, making sure that the train stays on the tracks. Excited now to get out to the Progressive Guest Line, where we are joined by Chris Curtis, an executive producer at WEEI in Boston. Chris, thanks for taking the time to join us tonight.
Oh, sure thing. How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. Let's start with some baseball talk, Chris. The MLB trade deadline is on August 2nd, less than 2 weeks away. At the moment, the Red Sox are two games back in the wild card race. Should they be buyers, sellers, both, or should they stand pat?
I think they should sell, because I don't think this team is going to win a World Series, but I am very doubtful that they will do that. I feel like Chaim Bloom, if it were up to him, he would trade Bogarts right now, but I just don't think the ownership group and the organization has the stomach for the backlash that would ensue if they made that kind of a deal. So my guess is they'll do some peripheral moves like they did last year. You know, Schwarber obviously turned out to be a great acquisition. But he wasn't a guy that was, you know, celebrated at the time. In fact, we had to apologize to Chaim Bloom on the Greg Hill Show at EEI because we were incredibly critical of their deadline moves, and it turned out to be, you know, all they needed, you know, two games away from the World Series. But I would say they should sell, but they won't. They'll either stand pat or add, you know, maybe a reliever and a, you know, a first baseman that's not going to blow anybody's socks off.
Yeah, most likely. They have players that they can't keep on the 40-man roster who have some trade value to get them a rental. So that's probably the direction they'll go in, even though it doesn't actually make sense based on the long-term vision for what this franchise seems to be. Now, Chris, some people think it's laughable. Others believe this wholeheartedly. Do you think the shift in how Fenway Sports Group runs the Red Sox is strictly about the rising cost for star players, or that their investments, like Liverpool Soccer purchasing the Penguins, and they'll likely own the NBA team that's added in Las Vegas in a few years, does that factor into them changing their approach?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference, and, you know, for all the crap Henry gets in Boston, I mean, you can't argue with four World Series since he bought the team. Fenway is a totally different place, and the team has been, by and large, an absolute success. So he's been an A as an owner since arriving when it comes to actual, you know, success on and off the field. But the issue for me with the broadening portfolio of organizations is that there's no longer a personal connection to the day-to-day operation of the Red Sox. And it just requires that. You know, this isn't the Bruins where you have the Jacobs up in Buffalo and they kind of have Sindin and then Chiarelli and then Sweeney kind of do the day-to-day. The Red Sox is sort of just, you just have to be here. You have to understand what the team is. You need to, if he were here every day and this was his only sports franchise, there's no way Bogart's endeavors would be in the position they're in. There's no way they wouldn't have a first baseman. There's no way that Schwarber would be playing in Philadelphia. There are so many sort of day-to-day operational decisions that he made when he was here. I don't know if you guys saw the, back in 03-04, I don't know how old you guys are, but you know, those teams, they did a lot of behind-the-scenes work on the, like, DVD. I think it was, like, Faith Rewarded and stuff like that back then. And there was a scene at the trade deadline in 2004 where Theo, John, Tom, and Larry are in a conference room, and they execute a couple deals. It was, oh, yeah, that was the Nomar deal, right.
Yep, 04.
And they're like, what do the Yankees do? Yeah, what do the Yankees do? What did this team do? And they were like, toasting beers, I kid you not, in Fenway Park. Whereas today, you know, none of that's going on. And while Chaim Bloom is much smarter than I am, and I'm sure he has a great plan in place, there's just an element to understanding the market that is required when making these kinds of deals. And I just feel like that sort of tangential thing that you can't quantify is what has been the biggest element of Henry's broadening sports portfolio.
if the Red Sox surprisingly end up deciding to sell off, which player is untouchable in your opinion?
I mean, I would say untouchable right now. There's really, I mean, if they're going to let Bogarts and Devers walk, I would say there's nobody untouchable. I mean, I can't fathom that they're using the guy Olson, the reporting the other day from, I think it was Alex Speer in the Boston Globe, that said that they were using this first baseman who's 2 years older than Devers as the comp, 8 years, 160. Like, they're either intentionally lowballing as a means of getting the player to do something to crap his way out of town, or they're just totally out of touch. And I can't believe it's the second. Like, I can't believe Chaim Bloom believes that there was a shot in hell that Rafael Devers would sign that offer. So I've asked him that earlier this year on the Greg Hill Show, and I said, what's the point of offering a contract you know the player is not going to accept? And he fought back and said, what you hear in the press isn't always a true reflection of the offer. But I feel like there's nobody untouchable, and that's how he approaches the roster. My question, maybe for you guys in general, is how does that impact guys like Verdugo, who are on this team that are up and coming, and they admire Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers, and they're like, well, they're much better than I am, and they're being played around with when it comes to finances. How are they going to treat me?
Yeah, I think the message is clear, and that is it might not be the long-term home that Alex Verdugo might have imagined it was when he first came here in the Mookie Betts deal.
Yeah, it's just, how many MVPs can you move out of town? I mean, Mookie Betts, there's a chance next year that you'll have an all-star game with Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, and Rafael Devers all playing for other teams. Yeah, and that just seems so insane.
And maybe J.D. Martinez makes it to one more All-Star game, again, in a different uniform.
J.D. Martinez is such an odd guy in Boston sports history. Like, he just is like no pulse. He's like J.D. Drew, but with, you know, better on-field performance. Like, yeah. He elicits no emotional reaction. He just sort of shows up, gets on base, hits a couple home runs, says nothing. It's a very interesting career he's had in Boston.
Sticking with Devers briefly, do you think that Juan Soto's recent decision to turn down his $440 million contract will impact their dealings with him?
Yeah, I think the issue with that is just the money is exploding. Not to compare sports because I know it doesn't fit, but like Kyler Murray got $160+ million guaranteed today. 2 years ago, whatever the deal of the day is viewed as this insane thing that's going to come back to haunt you. Well, live sports is the only thing that continues to grow in the entertainment business because you can't DVR it. You watch it live, and sports betting is becoming pervasive across the country. So whatever the offer is, I feel like it's going to go up in time. Look at Aaron Judge, right? People were mocking him for turning down that deal. Cashman revealed the offer, and Yankees fans sided with Cashman. Now it's $100 million at least more than what that offer was.
Yeah, it's just crazy to watch the numbers go up, and that's why I was saying during our last segment, I think that trading star players is going to start to become commonplace as opposed to, for instance, when the Nationals let Bryce Harper go in free agency. So I think we're in for a new dynamic there. Chris, if we can switch gears here and talk about some off-season developments regarding the Boston Celtics. After the Malcolm Brogdon trade, FanDuel made them the odds-on favorite to win the 2023 NBA title. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you think that's a stretch?
Well, I think that'll change if and when Durant has moved to a contending team, but I agree with it, and I was actually on paternity leave when the Brogdon deal happened, and my man Wiggy was all up in arms about the clash that was about to happen between Smart and Brogdon. And to go back to a different sport, but a similar comparison, look at the Red Sox in 04. They bring in Folk, they bring in Schilling to a team that was already one hit away from the World Series. And the more competitive players you bring to a roster, look what the Patriots have done the last 20 years. The more good players you bring in, if the player is a true alpha and a guy can really, you know, is not going to lose, you're going to get the best out of them. So if Marcus Smart or Brogdon turn into an issue, then you figure it out and you get rid of the guy. But in my opinion, entering this season, the Brogdon deal, the Danilo Gallinari deal, that stuff, have as many talented players as you can, because outside of turnovers, I think depth was the biggest reason they lost in the finals.
Are the Celtics now the team to beat in the Eastern Conference with these additions?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think they're better than they were last year. You know, they'll have another year under their belt with Ime Udoka. I think Brad Stevens has been better than Danny was in terms of fitting around the corners of the team. Danny obviously got the big stars, and he should be credited for that. But I have a lot more faith at the deadline this year that Stevens will make a deal that will help the team immediately than Danny, because he would always hoard draft picks out of fear of, you know, he used those as job security. So the Celtics really, you know, it really sucks how it ended because of how great that run was. But my big concern with the Celtics is not going to be solved until the finals, because Tatum's performance in that final series scarred me. I mean, that was A-Rod Payton-esque. And it's, you know, there's just some people that don't have that killer instinct, that it doesn't mean everything for them to win a title. And it was disappointing because he kept texting Kobe before big games, and he did not embody the Kobe mentality in those big games.
No, I think more than anything else, he hit a wall. I'm personally not worried. It's fair to be in the camp of he has to show me before I can totally buy in. But I do think with Tatum, for instance, putting up 46 in Milwaukee, and that was also before the shoulder injury against Miami. So not to totally let him off the hook, he didn't play well in the NBA Finals, but I do think there were a lot of reasons for that. I'm not worried about Jason Tatum's mental or his hunger to win an NBA title.
Oh, I love disagreeing. Okay, so let's get into this for a second. What's with the grabbing the shoulder immediately in the games? It's telling the fans and the audience and everybody watching, like, I'm hurt. Don't blame me for my performance tonight. I would never see Jordan do that. I would never see Kobe do that. I would never see Steph Curry do that. I know those guys are all-time winning greats, and that's kind of a tough place to put Tatum in. But that
is where he's
really
trying to get to. I think that is the standard he should get held to. And if you want to say that that was the wrong approach and everything, that's fine, even if it did genuinely impact him, the shoulder pain in the moment. Because keep in mind that he would also play through it. It's not like it happened and he shied away from shots or asked to sub out of the game. So I think that there is a part of it where you can point to some immaturity on his end. My biggest concern would be Tatum and Jaylen Brown and company don't grow out of getting over the reality that they're convinced in their mind they're more talented than their opponent, because we've seen them. It cost them against the Miami Heat in the bubble, and it impacted them again against the Warriors in the finals. That's something they have to grow out of quickly.
Yeah, but I don't think it's immaturity. I mean, the guy is mature. He's been in these moments. Obviously that was his first finals, but he's been in big games since he got into the league after a year at Duke. I mean, I don't think it was immaturity. I think he just was the defense that they played, the manner in which Kerr, who I'm not a big fan of, but the defenses they drew up, they frustrated him. And you see people in those moments, in those games, either go right into the fire or, I'm not really ready. Obviously, that can change. There's a lot of people that won later in their career. LeBron James was on somewhere talking about how it reminded him of his series against the Spurs when he was young and he didn't know his ass from his elbow. So obviously, there's going to be plenty of time for Tatum to show us that he's not that guy. But though I took a lot more of a damaging view of that performance than you did in that series.
We'll see. It helps that the team is overall more talented. They have the depth, which will also help to pace these guys through an 82-game season and the postseason as well. Jason Tatum, I believe, ultimately will lead this team at least through the Eastern Conference next season. I think they're good enough to do so, even with the Bucks getting Middleton back. But time will tell. Chris Curtis, executive producer at WEEI. Chris, thanks for taking the time to join us tonight on the Diehards.
You got it, guys. Have a great night.
Same to you. When we return, Brendan and I will dive into everything from where Kevin Durant might end up and who should go after him to who are the legitimate NBA championship contenders and who do we deem to be the pretenders. We're also going to do an NFL buy or sell edition, looking at every team and player from the Cowboys to Lamar Jackson and on down the line, including some guy named Brady. That's coming up next on the Diehards. You're listening to the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Brendan Connolly coming to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. We've got Brian McDonald producing the show back in Houston, making sure the train stays on the tracks and everything runs smoothly back here in Boston. Brendan, I can't imagine that someone would hit you up on social media with a disagreement, let alone a complaint about anything you've said tonight. So if they want to express what I can only assume would be a platitude of some sort, where can they reach you on social media?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at BConn63, BConn63. You can read my work in the Boston Herald. I cover some high school and local stuff there, but I also cover the Celtics Bruins for WHD and some work for WMEX on the side. A lot of hats.
Busy man. Love the grind. Me, on the other hand, I'm an opinionated schmuck who they're probably going to come at with the pitchforks, and I'm conditioned to it, so I say bring it on. You can reach me at Bobby Krivitsky. That's BobbyKri, V as in Victor, ITSKY. And shameless plug, you can also find a link to my work there for Sports Illustrated covering the Boston Celtics. So it's not just being able to tweet at me and tell me how bad my on-air takes are. It's being able to tell me how much my articles stink as well. Have at it. Again, that's BConn63 and Bobby Krivitsky over on Twitter, and you can find us there. Coming up next, let me preview the second half of the slate because it is loaded. We're going to be talking about everything and everyone from Will Levis in a rather disgusting habit, in my opinion, to who should go after Kevin Durant. We're going to be talking NBA championship contenders, or do Brendan and I deem them to be pretenders? I'm sure there'll be plenty of debating going on there with some of the names on our list. And we're also going to be talking about the NFL, everyone from Mac Jones to the loaded AFC West and the Kansas City Chiefs, how we feel about them without Tyreek Hill as they move forward, Lamar Jackson, and of course the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to dive into whether we think that they miss the playoffs this year after representing the NFC East last season. All that and more coming up next. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.